Destination, freedom. Listen, it's the Freedom Bell.
Aye, the Freedom Bell, my friends. And this is Paul Revere, called back from the shadows by the sound of the Freedom Bell, to cry again a warning that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance.
Destination Freedom is presented by Station WMAQ in the interest of human freedom the world over. Paul Revere is the symbol of warning, ready to ride down the skies to shout his alarm. His destination, now and forever, freedom.
How much do you love your country? How much? How high a price would you be willing to pay for the freedom which you now enjoy? Would you be willing to pay the price that Nathan Hale did for freedom? Not for himself, but for the countless millions who were to come after him? I'll let you be the judge. It was in September of 1776 that Nathan Hale, then a captain in the American Army, was writing a letter to his sweetheart, Alice Addis.
Alice, my darling, when I left you just 5 short days ago, I had hoped to be with you again by now and explain to you in person all the things I couldn't tell you that night we parted. Remember how you kept asking me where I was going and when I was going to return?
But, Nathan, where are you going? Is your regiment leaving New York?
Hush, my sweet. Military secret.
Oh, Nathan, I didn't mean...
I'm sure you didn't mean anything.
Is it all right if I ask you how long you'll be gone?
Regular little question box, aren't you? You'll hardly miss me before I return. Mere 5 days or so.
Oh, Nathan, I'm glad. But I wish you weren't going.
Why, darling, a fine officer's sweetheart you are. After all the brave farewells you've bid me this past year or two.
I know, but I can't explain. Somehow this time I've the strangest feeling.
Just more nerves, sweet. Now, quick, let me see you smile. There, that's more like it. And mind you, no making eyes at Cousin Sam while I'm away.
Nathan, how can you say such a thing? Besides, you know I've never fancied his looks. That saber scar across his cheek. Oh, fine, Nathan, you're ribbing me, and I'm being so serious.
Too serious, dearest.
Nathan, there is one thing about your cousin Sam.
What about him? Haven't heard from good old Sam since I joined the Army.
It's nothing to joke about, Nathan. It's been rumored that he has Tory connections and he's often away on secret business for the British.
Oh, I can hardly believe that.
It's true, Nathan.
Oh, enough about idle gossip. Time is fleeting. Let's talk about her.
Oh, darling. Promise me you'll be careful. Nathan, I wish I knew where you were going. I wish I knew.
I wished I could have told you my destination, Alice, but I couldn't. Now I can barely write the words I could not say. It's too late for me to see the light of understanding flash across your face as I give you the answers, not only to your questions, but to the eternal question in the minds of all mankind. What is the purpose of being? That question, too, can I answer now. I've found the purpose for which I was born, and I'm happy. I was beginning to see the answer when, as an undergraduate at Yale, home for my Christmas vacation, Cousin Sam came to pay me a visit.
Why, Sam, glad to see you. How's everything at Harvard?
Hello, Nathan. Just thought I'd stop by to see if Yale had given you the proper finish.
Same old Sam. Sit down, man. Let me look at you. Yeah, same old Sam. But I do believe with an added look of Harvard dignity.
Yes, perhaps.
Sam. Sam, there's no one like you. I can just picture you 10 years from now. Serious, dignified.
10 years from now, aye. Even 5 years. All men in the colonies will have learned dignity. The dignity of law and order and a proper allegiance to their king.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that all the scatterbrained people in America today who are openly defying the crown, complaining loudly of taxes and all acts of British Parliament and otherwise obstructing the efforts of the Crown to rule them properly, with foolish talk of freedom and independence, will have to be taught to respect their mother country.
Look at it this way, Sam. These people whom you call scatterbrained are merely asking for their rights. It's not the taxes they complain of, but the taxing without proper representation. It is not that they do not respect England, but that they feel they should not longer be a part of her. We are a nation ourselves, Sam, and as such we have incontestable right to our own government, our own land, our own liberty. Toward this end, we should work.
You laughed when I told you about it, Alice. Somehow that night the desire was born in me to pit my strength against the foes of liberty. I found that many espoused the cause of freedom. So many that they became strong enough to fight for it. I was one who urged them to take up arms.
Attention, please. Fellow townspeople, I should like to introduce a young man who has some important words to say to you. One of our own boys, our local schoolmaster, Nathan Hales.
We have just heard wonderful and startling news. A fight for freedom has just begun at Lexington and Concord. The great struggle for American independence has commenced. We have called this meeting to see what can be done about forming a company of volunteers here at New London. I plead with you to take patriotic action at once. I say let us take up arms immediately and never lay them down until we have obtained our independence. Let us fight until our freedom is won.
It was the next morning that I enlisted in the army. There's so much I've never told you about this past year, Alice. I don't mean the fighting. I mean the glorious moments when I could perform some extra service for my country. Like the time I captured the British supply vessel and heard the sweet sound of cheering from the throats of cold, hungry American soldiers as I neared the New York shores. Things like that I wanted to tell you. But I must hasten with this letter, Alice, my dearest. Time is passing. Do you begin to see how I was ever moving forward toward the one great purpose of my life? At first, just small and important steps, but always for one single cause. Cause of freedom. My biggest step along the way was my chance to go on the mission that I couldn't tell you about that night we parted. Because of my capture of the supply sloop, I was one of the officers chosen to attend a meeting in Colonel Knowlton's headquarters in New York.
Men, I'll come straight to the point. All of you present at this meeting are officers of the American Army who perform some outstanding service for your country. I've called you together to issue an invitation from our Chief General Washington. An invitation for one man among you to serve the cause of freedom supremely.
Well, what do you mean, sir?
As you know, since our retreat from Long Island, our army here in New York is in a perilous position. The enemy may attack any moment. As you see from this map, our men are scattered in small companies for only about a dozen miles along Manhattan Island. The British lie in compact detachments along the entire opposite shore of New York Bay and the East River. General Washington feels that the fate of the entire war depends on our obtaining information as to the enemy's next move. Where will they strike? You have a comment, Captain Reed?
Yes, Colonel Knowlton. It seems to me their plans would be to land forces at Bloomingdale.
They're as likely to land on the shores of the East and Harlem Rivers and cut off all our communications. Lieutenant Wells?
I think they'll land about there, above the city.
Conjectures, and gentlemen, all conjectures. The fact is that we don't know, and it's vital that we find out.
What about our scouts? Surely they found out something?
Only that the British are well equipped with artillery and munitions. Our scouts have been unable to pierce the British lines.
So then, how can we possibly find out this information?
There is only one way. Send a man in disguise into the enemy's camp.
What?
General Washington has commissioned me to find a man who will volunteer for this valuable service.
You mean become a spy, sir?
Surely, you men understand how important this is. You know the present weak condition of our army. We could not stand a surprise attack. We must be prepared for it. Who among you will undertake this mission? Captain Black? Captain Adams? Captain Reed?
There's not a man among us who would not gladly fight for freedom in the very mouth of the cannon, sir. But this is different. You're asking one of us to become a spy. The most scorned creature on the face of the earth.
Gentlemen, after bravely fighting for so long, are we to lose the freedom for which we fought for want of just one man unselfish enough to volunteer for this service? Lieutenant Wells.
Colonel Knowlton, I would give my life for my country and the cause of freedom, but not my honor.
But think, men, think. This is no fool's task. It will take a man skilled in military and scientific knowledge, a good draftsman, possessed of a quick eye, a cool head, and unflinching courage, one in whose judgment and fidelity the entire American nation must have confidence. Captain Fitch.
I'd rather face death a million times in honest fighting than risk my neck even once in a manner so despicable.
Captain Hale, you're the last man to be approached. So far, you've said nothing. Will you undertake this?
I will go. That's how it was, Alice. I know you would have understood why I volunteered. There were 14,000 trapped men, cold, hungry, half sick, waiting, watching, not knowing from where the enemy would strike. These men had earned their right to freedom. I was thinking of them that night, as in my disguise as a schoolmaster. I rode through the darkness, searching for the lights of an American sloop to take me across the Sound to the opposite shore where the enemy was encamped.
Aye, I'm Captain Bond, captain on the Schuyler. Your papers state that you're Nathan Hale, schoolmaster.
Yes, sir. Here is a special order signed by General Washington, authorizing my passage across to Long Island.
Let me see. In order. We'll pull an anchor immediately. We'll land you at Huntington, the nearest point on the Long Island side.
The captain looked me over with a disapproving eye, but he asked no questions. The night was silent as we glided through the water. The 110 miles across the Sound from the American side to the British stronghold seemed short. But the gaping space between American ideals of freedom and British ideas of supremacy was endless. It was almost daylight as I said goodbye to Captain Pond and was lowered into a barge to be rowed ashore.
Be quick about it, men.
Aye, aye, sir.
Mr. Hale, your orders say to return for you the morning of the 20th at daybreak.
Yes, Captain. At the very spot where your men leave me.
Aye. Look for the barge at that time. The Schuyler will drop anchor offshore of Huntington.
There was a faint glow of light in the east as I scrambled up on the shore. I struck out boldly, and it almost seemed that I was, in reality, once again just a schoolmaster. As a schoolmaster, my first thought was food. As a spy, information about the enemy. A small farmhouse came into view, and I started toward it with the hope of obtaining a combination of my two needs. The farmer came to the door himself and seemed pleased to share his food for a price.
Good. I don't know when I've tasted eggs like these.
Fresh laid, they are. More coffee.
Thanks. Can't refuse that. Tell me, see many soldiers around here?
About a mile up the road, they're thicker than flies.
That's so.
Yep, up the Cedars. Widow Titchester's tavern. Regular Tory had be.
I
really didn't mean nothing by that. I was just saying.
No, don't worry about me. I'm just a school teacher without a post. I've no time to take sides.
Oh, Well, you know, man can be too careful these days. For a minute I was afeard.
All you need fear for me is that I'm not back here too often eating up all your tasty victuals.
I started toward the Cedars feeling that I had scored a partial victory. I'd been accepted by the first person I had met on British territory. And I had found out where I could mingle with the enemy. But I had no plan. All that guided me was a desperate urgency to accomplish my mission with as much speed and caution as possible. Yet I had a strange feeling of happiness. That at last I was moving with rapid strides toward the great purpose of my life. Can you understand that, Alice? Such were my thoughts, emotions, as I arrived at the Widow Chichester's tavern, where I was greeted at the door by the widow herself.
Well, well, who've we got here? A new customer, eh? And look at him. Huh? What a handsome lad.
And you, madam, must be the Widow Chichester.
That I am. But just call me Widow Chich. Everyone does. Now, what'll it be, handsome? Name your poison.
Ale, a glass of ale.
Aye, Scotty! One glass of ale over here.
Care to join me, Widow Chich?
You learn fast. Don't mind if I do. And a whiskey here, too, Scotty.
Allow me.
Ah, gentlemen, too? Well, we don't have much around here. These redcoats must have left their manners back home.
I heard they like your place.
Like it? They love it. And why not? It's a good place for them to hang around and play cards. As for getting much cash out of them. Hey, Scotty, how about them drinks?
Cards, you say? You know, I'm rather hankering for a good card game myself.
You? You don't look old enough to know a jack from a queen. However, for a handsome six-footer like you, I just might be able to arrange a little friendly game tonight with some soldiers. If you've got some cash.
You're there, fella. What you say your name was?
Just call me Nate.
What a hand. Look at him. Are we going to let a school teacher show us up like this?
The night is yet young. His luck may change.
Yes, my luck might change at any moment. A plan began to form in my mind. If it worked, there was a bare chance that it would get me into the British camp at Huntington.
Another drink. I need another drink. My losses always look smaller with a drink under my belt. It's Scotty! Where's that fellow?
I'll get you a drink. Scotty seems to be busy.
Now, if I could just have a quiet word with the Widow Chich.
Say I can do you a favor, handsome?
Yes. Could you close up the place now? If I stop playing while my luck is good, half my winnings are yours.
I get the idea. For you, handsome, and a handful of notes, I'd chase the king himself out into the night.
What a foul woman, that Widow Chich, chasing us out at this hour.
Yes, and I know me luck would have changed if we could have just played a little longer.
Oh, Nate here won all me money.
Sorry, fellas. I'm leaving Huntington in the morning, too. Heard of a teaching post in Suffolk County. But there's the rest of the night. Perhaps we could find another place.
I've an idea. We could finish the game at the barracks.
Oh, the barracks, but I
could... I would have no trouble getting you in, Nate. Anyone could tell from looking at you, you wouldn't know a musket from a marquee.
Besides, isn't Phil Drake on sentry duty tonight? And didn't we do him a little favor last week?
Oh, there you go.
Getting into the enemy's camp was as simple as that. The British were so confident from their many victories that they had become careless. At the barracks, I began losing steadily, and the men became even more friendly. As I sit here now, watching the dawn approach, I think of that morning. How boldly I began making what observations I could of their fortifications, their munitions, their field works.
Never saw a man need so much fresh air as our schoolteacher friend here. Mm-hmm. That's the fourth time he's left the tent.
You know how schoolmasters are, filled with crazy ideas about health.
I was anxious to move on. My time was short, and there were five British camps yet to cover on Long Island.
It was important that I leave while the men were still friendly and could help me get in the next camp along the way.
Hope you have better luck getting a teaching post in Suffolk, mate, than you have at court.
All that's bothering me is having to leave such good companions. I hear the citizens of Suffolk are mostly rebels.
Sure. My good friend Sergeant Robert Mitchell is quartered there, mate. A great chap. You just look him up and tell him I sent you.
Oh, I'd rather hesitate. Camp regulations there and all. Perhaps if you gave me a note to him.
Of course. Hand me the pen. Oh, good old Mitchell. You two will take to one another, I know.
So it was that I went on. From camp to camp, from Red Hook to Flushing Bay. Watching the enemy squads as they fortified their field works. Noting their entrenchments, their batteries, their munition stores. I tell you all these little things, my Alice, because I want to feel that you've been there with me, step by step. Then suddenly it happened. My luck at this game of spying began to change. Even as I had my luck at cards, it was at Flushing Bay that I made my first mistake. I was sitting in the Red Horse Inn with three British soldiers with whom I had acquainted.
All right, school teacher, pay us.
Yes, you're the loser.
I reached into the pocket of my jacket and pulled out some money, knocking my arm against the table as I did so.
Look out, you're dropping it. Here, I'll help you pick it up.
Too late, I saw that one of my precious notations on enemy movements was lying on the floor with the scattered pound notes.
Here, I guess this is all. Oh, no. Oh, wait. What's this slip of paper? Yours too, Nate?
I held my breath while he turned it over.
What sort of writing is that on it?
Warbling. I never had too much schooling, but it looks like Latin.
Oh, it is Latin. It must be one of my school notations.
Latin? Well, I'll be jiggered. Here it is, Nate. These foreign languages are too much for me.
My luck had held after all. The sky has now become quite bright. In the little time that has left, my dearest, let me tell you about the last lap of my return journey. It was on the 19th of September, just 4 days after leaving American territory, that I trudged happily toward the Widow Chichester's tavern, hardly feeling the blisters on my feet, where all my enemy notations and drawings were hidden between the soles of my shoes. Widow Chich herself again greeted me at the door of the tavern.
Well, la! La, will you look who's here? Handsome and stud. Where have you been this past week?
Oh, visiting around, trying to find a teaching situation.
Ah, and you didn't find one, I can tell by your face. Too bad. But I could have told you, no one round these parts wants book learning. Say, I thought you'd be a professional gambler by this time. Here you play a pretty smart game and that you're a good loser, too. Oh, boy, you look all in. A drink's what you need. Come on over to this back table, sit down and rest. There now, boy. Feeling better?
Oh, just hearing you talk boosts my morale.
Say, I like that school teaching talk of yours. you're beat out, boy. Tell you what, I got a nice room upstairs where you can stay for the night. Hey, who's that fellow over there? He's been staring at you.
Somehow I scented danger. I froze at her words, not daring to look around.
Finn, that first table, civilian, short, stocky fellow with a scar across his cheek.
A scar across his cheek? Cousin Sam. I tried hard to remember what you had told me about him, Alice. Slowly I turned my head. For one brief moment, our eyes met across the room.
Well, what do you know about that? He must be one of the card-playing friends you beat. Quick as a flash, he got up and disappeared out the front door. Oh, boy, you really must have cleaned him.
I heard her laughter above the sound of my pounding heart. Why had he left so suddenly? What was his connection with the British? Questions buzzed in my head while the widow talked on.
Handsome, ain't you been listening? Oh, come on, boy, you need sleep. I'll show you to your room.
By the time I fell asleep that night, I had forgotten my feeling of danger. The next morning at daybreak, I was pacing the shore at Huntingdon where the barge was to land that was to take me and my valuable information back to the American lines. I scanned the water and saw the faint outline of a boat approaching from Norwalk. I could hardly contain my exultance as it approached. Victory! I would be able to get to General Washington by nightfall. Someone was waving to me from the barge. I waved back. A voice came from across the waters.
Ahoy! Ahoy!
The boat drew closer. I could make out several figures in the early morning light. Suddenly, I saw them plainer. Six men in the uniform of the British Marines. I turned to flee.
Surrender, Sergeant Hale, or die!
I looked back. Six muskets were leveled at me. Slowly, I turned around and raised my arms. As I turned, I could make out another figure. As I moved closer, I could see his face. Once again, Cousin Sam and I were staring into each other's eyes. And I knew that I had failed. I was taken to General Howe, commander of the British Army.
Then you admit, Captain Hale, that you are an American spy.
I do, sir.
You realize the evidence found upon your person is conclusive proof of your guilt?
Yes, sir.
Are you ready to receive sentence?
I am.
I sentence you to be hanged at daybreak tomorrow morning.
So you see, Alice, my darling, why I must end this letter now that it is daybreak. A young British officer about my own age, who is my guard, keeps watching me from the other end of the tent. He just signaled me that it is time for me to go. I'm ready to take my last step for the purpose for which I was born. To give my life for the glorious cause of freedom. Farewell, my love. Farewell.
The ladder. Give me the letter that he's been permitted to write. Well, come on, Captain Wiles, the letter.
Here it is, sir.
I shall now read it. A love letter. Alice, my darling. The story of your whole spying episode, eh? Very touching, Captain Hale, and interesting, too. Think you, sir, that I would permit this to get into rebel hands? It shall be destroyed. That took you out of your calm. Now, rebel spy, have you a last dying confession to make?
I've only this to say. I regret that I have but one life to lose for my country.
Hey, friends. Freedom, perhaps, is just a word to you. But Nathan Hale gave his life for it. And do not hold lightly that for which men like him have given their lives. Treasure it. Guard it carefully, so that they may not have died in vain.
Paul Revere, portrayed by Maurice Copeland, will return next Sunday to narrate the next chapter in the story we call Destination Freedom. Presented by station WMAQ in the interest of human freedom the world over. Today's script was written by Madeline Peters and produced under the direction of John Collins. Russ Reed played Nathan Hale. Other members of the cast were Paul Barnes, Donald Gallagher, Geraldine Kay, and Arthur Peterson. The special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and was played by Helen Morton and Jose Bethencourt. Our engineer was George Wilson, and sound effects were created by Cliff Mueller. Now, this is Charles Mountain reminding you, the sound of the Freedom Bell is your invitation to follow Paul Revere along the road to destination freedom. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.